Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Alice Waters has been at the forefront of our conversation about food the last 40 years through her groundbreaking restaurant, Chez Panisse in Berkeley, her edible schoolyard project, which began at a local middle school, and through her many cookbooks. Her latest, The Art of Simple Food 2, brings together tips for cultivating a vegetable garden with recipes that use that garden's harvest. It's published by Clarkson Potter, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Alice Waters back to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Had you always planned to write a follow-up to The Art of Simple Food? That was published in 2007, and I'm assuming that you did have a problem in that you couldn't fit everything into that book.
It's true. And I think the issue of taking care of the land has become something so critical and so important that I felt like I really had to, if you will, ground the book, The Art of Simple Food 1, by doing this second volume.
Well, do you think we're having two conversations about food in this country, one that's about local, organic, and quality, and the other that's more centered on cost and speed and ease?
Oh, without question.
Are they part of the same conversation?
I really feel like that cost, speed, and ease is about the culture that we live in right now. And it's not just about the food, the fast, cheap, and easy, but it's the way that people are living their lives now. They want everything cheap. And I think we really need to recognize that and together come back to our senses and really talk about it as being an indoctrination that's deliberate.
Well, you have focused on fast and easy over the years. In fact, that's one of the things that distinguish you from a lot of the other people who were opening restaurants at the time, who had restaurants that had dishes that took 85,000 different ingredients and 95,000 different steps. Your work has always been quicker and easier.
I like to think about it as being simpler. I like the ease of it too, or the sort of reassurance that you have when you can make something quickly and please somebody. But that comes from finding ingredients that are so good that you don't have to do anything to them.
The recipes in this book are grouped by the vegetables that are featured in them. And I was wondering if that's how you often cook, figuring out what's ripest and in season and then going on from there.
Absolutely, without any question. I go to the market first and then I come back. But it's organized in a very particular way because we wanted to bring people into the ideas of really growing food. So we talk about meandering plants, and we're in that cucumber place and thinking about squashes. And I think it's important, even if you're not really getting the farming part, there's something that's connecting as you're reading the recipes.
Well, even though this isn't a vegetarian book, so many cookbooks are really broken up into meat, poultry, fish. This book is grouped by vegetables.
Well, it's also grouped, by what's growing. And it's true that we wanted to put the emphasis there because, as you probably saw, that mission statement at the front of the book, that we need to treasure the farmer. Mm. We need to become farmers. We need to get our hands in the earth. And I think that that's where you really, really come back to your senses.
Well, you actually say you list 9 things that we should do, starting with treasure the farmer, ending with teach children the art of simple food. Should we think of those as commandments or guidelines or words of advice?
I think all of the above. And they aren't mine. I mean, they really aren't mine. These are ideas that have been around since the beginning of civilization, that when everybody was kind of a farmer, and that's where your food comes from, and you need to nurture the soil, and you need to, you know, plant and learn from nature. And I guess I really put in cultivate your palate, because that's something that maybe a lot of other cultures have done deliberately. But we haven't in this country really had a culture of food that is discerning. I think that that's still true. I think we're learning. At least I am. And I feel like, you know, I just got back from Rome. And what people know about food there is astonishing to me.
Well, since your original inspiration was Provence, in fact, you even named your restaurant after a character in Pagnol, I was wondering if you had picked up the philosophy there.
Well, I certainly picked up the philosophy in Paris when I went there at 19. It was a little bit later that I went to Domaine Tempier and I met Richard Olney at Lulu Perro. And I think between the two of them, they really taught me a lot about purity.
I have to tell you a story, because one of the other things is Share the Harvest. It's about generosity. Many years ago, I was in the airport in Marseille, and I had some – it was still francs. I had some francs left over, and I was going to buy a bottle of wine. And the wine merchant said, "Monsieur, for a few francs more, I suggest this one." It was Domaine Tempier.
Oh.
And I took it home. And I thought, I have made a major discovery. This is a very great wine. And I thought that it was my secret, because the guy at the airport had told me about it. And then the next week in the New York Times, I read Alice Waters is having her 15th annual Domaine Tempier Festival at Chez Panisse. Well, I guess we all discover something when we discover it. But that whole business about sharing the harvest and hospitality is an important part of cooking, isn't it?
Oh, it's a terribly important part of cooking. I think it's not even what you have cooked as much as the fact that you have offered that to somebody else. It just makes me think about, do you know about the garden project at the San Francisco County Jail that was run by Catherine Sneed?
I don't. Is it like what you're doing with the schools?
Well, you know, it really inspired what I'm doing in the schools now. But she took the inmates outside, because she was a therapist, and she taught them how to garden. And they grew these incredible fruits and vegetables on 9 acres of land in South San Francisco. But that was therapeutic enough to have them not want to leave jail. But what happened was she had them offer that food to the homeless centers in San Francisco. And in doing that, they really were changed, I mean, dramatically. And they ended up, you know, really getting jobs when they got out in the tree corps and changing their lives. So
we recently had a visit from Chef Jeff Henderson, who learned how to cook in prison, and now he has his own television shows. It turned his life around.
Well, I think it has that possibility, and I've certainly seen it, you know, in the Edible Schoolyard Project, because, you know, those are teenagers, and you think that they can't change their eating habits, and in fact, they do when they learn to cook.
My guest is Alice Waters. Her latest book, The Art of Simple Food 2, Recipes, Flavor, and Inspiration from the New Kitchen Garden. It's published by Clarkson Potter. Yeah, you have a lot of information here about different varieties of fruits and vegetables and an overview of how to cook with them. One that I'm I think most people here are not familiar with is cardoons. Are they as available here as they would be in the Bay Area?
Well, probably not as available just because of the growing season. But I know that up at Yale University at the Sustainable Food Project, the garden director planted cardoons there along with artichokes. They're in the same family. And they grew pretty well. But we have a pretty long season of cardoons in the fall, and they're kind of that beautiful, bittersweet taste.
Well, of course, if you live in California, you do have pretty much all the produce anyone could ever want available to you fresh.
But that's not true.
That's not true.
I think people have the illusion of that. But we have a longer growing season, no question. And sometimes we can have salad and greens outside all winter long. But I can tell you, we don't have a single tomato at the restaurant except three and a half, four months of the year. Same with eggplant. All of those things that are really summer vegetables only grow in Northern California for sure. For a limited period of time.
I just picked the last tomatoes from my garden.
Oh, beautiful. Have you canned any?
Well, my wife is putting a lot of them in the freezer, and we'll bring them out that way, or I'm roasting some. And
beautiful.
We'll use that in the future. We have posted your recipe for rutabaga and parsnip gratin. Those two vegetables are a lot more available these days in farmers markets, but you don't see them a lot on restaurant menus. Are they underappreciated?
Well, I think they are. They aren't very common. They have become much more common, and I think we will see more on the restaurant menus. But even, you know, 5 years ago, you didn't see very many turnips, and there they are. And you certainly didn't see colored carrots, and they're omnipresent. It's a matter of finding those heirloom seeds and trying them out, and you can have an array of color and taste in the winter that's really pretty delicious.
Are there certain things you have to do to prepare rutabagas and parsnips? You have to soften them?
No. Peeling and slicing is where what it's about. It's not a complicated thing. It's a matter of keeping them the same thickness so that they cook at the same time.
Well, mostly the winter vegetables are roasted, but you suggest frying vegetables by dipping them in yogurt flour and then into hot oil. Why yogurt?
Well, it sort of coats the vegetables differently. It's like putting them in buttermilk.
Do you have to thin it out?
Well, not really. You do a little bit, but it depends on the yogurt. Some are very loose and some are more thick. But you want to just coat it quickly. The flour sticks to it, and it also has that little sourness, which is nice.
Would you suggest doing that with chicken or fish?
I think you certainly could do that with chicken or fish. Even though we haven't done it with chicken or fish.
Well, maybe it'll pop up at Chez Panisse sometime in the near future.
And we'll give you credit.
Alice Waters' latest book is The Art of Simple Food 2, Recipes, Flavor, and Inspiration from the New Kitchen Garden. It is published by Clarkson Potter. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Alice Waters. Her latest book, The Art of Simple Food 2, Recipes, Flavor, and Inspiration from the New Kitchen Garden. It is published by Clarkson Potter. And Kitchen Garden, because that's the way people do it in Europe, and if you can do it here, you suggest we should?
Well, I remember back when my parents had a victory garden from World War II, and I kind of grew up in that garden.
Why do you think we don't see as many nowadays?
Well, it's all, again, about that fast food culture that would like us to go and buy things that are already made and not be interested in where they came from. So I think the best way to sort of get back to eating what's in season is to have your own little garden. I mean, even if it's as small as a window box.
And do you grow different things all the time?
I do. I do. I have a very small space. I have some possibility of some trees, and I have an apple tree and a persimmon tree and a bay tree and a little small quince. But it's enough because it's a lot of harvest from the big trees. But
well, it's easier to grow squash or tomatoes, but Brussels sprouts. We posted a recipe for roasted Brussels sprouts with sesame seeds and ginger that is in your book.
I don't grow the Brussels sprouts. I go to the farmer's market and get the Brussels sprouts, which I saw down at Union Square the other day. They're beautiful on their stalk.
And do you like them better on the stalk?
Well, I just know I like to look at the stalk because it tells me when, it's almost like you're picking them off, that they're alive longer when they're on the stalk. But there's something about knowing how they're grown. And looking at the stem and seeing, when they're picked, that is really important to me.
Brussels sprouts also didn't get a lot of respect for a long time. I guess that's changing a little bit as people figure out just how delicious they are when you roast them.
Exactly. I think that they are. I think we always had them steamed in ways where they were overcooked, and to just pull them apart and just fast saute them with olive oil and garlic is one of my favorite greens.
There are some greens that taste better because they're grown in the cold. There's even winter spinach, which is sweeter than the regular spinach, I guess because it has to help itself survive through the cold. But Brussels sprouts seem to, that's why they're so great at this time of year.
Oh, they are. And they're small, and a big old cabbage is a whole other story. But these little cabbages, if you will.
You also include a variation with salsa verde instead of the sesame seeds and ginger. I've always wondered whether you can eat the individual leaves of Brussels sprouts or if they're just too fragile.
Just to eat them raw? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the great things you can do is pull all the leaves off. And then just like they turn into a kind of a salad. You can make kind of a warm salad out of them with some vinegar and garlic, of course.
So we've posted a number of recipes from the book, but I want to talk about something else now. The Wall Street Journal's magazine recently named you the humanitarian innovator for 2003 for your work with Edible Schoolyard, which you launched at a school at Berkeley. Are kids involved in all the aspects of gardening and cooking?
They are, but it's not a gardening class per se, and it's not a cooking class per se. It's a science class outside in the garden. They're using the lab of the garden to teach science. And, of course, the kids love to be out there. And at the same time, they're, learning how to plant the seeds and measuring the beds for a math class, and they're engaged in what it is to grow food and make compost and think about the cycle of growing.
So then they're much more likely to want to eat the food that they played a role in growing.
Well, I can tell you one truth, real truth, from 17 years of running the Edible Schoolyard Project in Berkeley. If kids grow it and they cook it, they all want to eat it. And that's it. They have a good time.
I misspoke. You won the award for this year, 2013. I don't know why I said 2003, but
Thank you. You
think it's finally sinking in because there are now similar projects all over the country?
Well, there are. There are thousands of projects, and I think it is sinking in. To have the Wall Street Journal honor me in this beautiful way means that it is in the mainstream.
But you also were one of the people who successfully pushed the Obama White House to put in a kitchen garden on the grounds. Do you see that as an important symbol?
Oh, I think it's the most important. I think the picture of Michelle Obama digging in the garden with children went around the world. And people really, it was a message to everyone.
Do you find that the kids who are at the school, it's Martin Luther King Jr. School, the middle school, are educating their parents about food?
Well, I do think so. I do think so. When they're involved there for 3 years, they become these incredible spokesmen for all of the issues of sustainability and pleasure of eating and cooking.
Now, you've talked about the importance of paying farmers a fair price. And there are concerns, of course, that that would mean that we will all be paying a lot more at the stores. But it has been suggested that we subsidize farmers who grow some pretty awful stuff, and then we kind of penalize the farmers who grow the better stuff.
Well, I have a project that really involves an investment from the government in children's health up front rather than out back. And I think we need to edibly educate every child from nursery school. And if we paid the farmers and had a criteria for the buying of food, we could support these people to grow the right food for the schools.
Have you looked at the farm bill that doesn't seem to be able to be passed?
Well, I don't think it's enough money. It's not enough money for the farmers, and they need that.
And then there are going to be cutbacks on food stamps. Is that
exactly? I mean, it's completely shocking because those are the people who need it the most. And if we don't feed every child for free at school, I don't know how we can stand up and in a moral place.
My guest is Alice Waters, whose latest book is The Art of Simple Food 2, Recipes, Flavor, and Inspiration from the New Kitchen Garden. It is published by Clarkson Potter. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Your restaurant, Chez Panisse, has been open for more than 40 years. What's it been like to see so many other people imitate it? You could have opened up a whole bunch of Chez Panisses like so many other chefs have.
Well, it's so beautiful to see what young people are doing right now and all the restaurants and the kinds of work that people have become involved in who both started at the restaurant or who have eaten at the restaurant. But it's really a philosophy of food that has sort of spoken to people. It's not necessarily the way we cook. It's the way that I think we all need to think about food.
Well, and it seems to be catching on because a restaurant writer, not going to mention names, told me that if she gets another call from someone who's opening a new restaurant who says, and we're going to make it all locavore, as though they were the only one who ever thought of doing it, she said she's going to scream.
Well, it's so new, in a way, for people to think about food like this as being absolutely from nearby and only eaten in season and, cook simply. I mean, this is the way, again, that people have been doing since the beginning of time.
And we're lucky in this area because we have a lot of farms.
But
here,
when
right?
you go back and you see what people eat in the winter in New York and up in New England, you find nuts and fruit syrups that have been made. You find beautiful fish. You find different kinds of grains. And I mean, it's endless what you can cook with in the winter months.
Wasn't there a fire at Chez Panisse in March?
There was.
How much damage was there?
Well, it burned the front of the restaurant, all of the beautiful woodwork of Kip Mesereau and other artisan woodworkers. And so it kind of broke our hearts, but they all came back and rebuilt it.
So it's as good as new.
Well, I think it's better than new almost.
Now, just one more thing, and we don't have a lot of time. There was a lot of criticism about a recent Time magazine profile called Gods of Food because it featured only male chefs. The question about why there aren't more female chefs has been asked over and over. Is that even the question that we should be asking?
Probably not. And I felt like the article, it made me sad because I really like all of those three chefs that are on the cover of the Time magazine. I admire them. And their work involves a lot of philanthropy, a lot of thinking about local farmers, whether they're in the rainforest or whether they're, you know, over in Denmark. And I know that David Chang really believes in edible education and children's, you know, in children. And so it's very wrong-headed to just be in that place of celebrity. And there are so many extraordinary women who have influenced the world of food and in remarkable ways.
Alice Waters is the owner of Chez Panisse Restaurant and Cafe in Berkeley, California, founder of the Edible Schoolyard Project. She's received 3 James Beard Awards and the IACP Lifetime Achievement Award, and written many New York Times bestsellers, including 40 Years at Chez Panisse and The Art of Simple Food, In the Green Kitchen, The Edible Schoolyard, and now The Art of Simple Food 2. By the way, as I said earlier, we have posted a number of recipes from it. It includes recipes. It also says flavor and inspiration from the new kitchen garden. It's published by Clarkson Potter. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Oh, thank you so much.